First question. There is a certain saying in various energetic approaches that immersing in water or just taking a shower not only cleans some types of lower energies, but also takes away some beneficial energies, such as protection or healer's energies that have been conveyed to a person. Does this principle apply to energy coming from the spiritual realm, such as the violet flame or Archangel Michael's protection or the Master's energy received during invocations? Mother Mary, in general, it does not apply to the energies coming from us. And it is, of course, correct that water can wash away certain lower energies, but it's not a given. It's not an automatic thing. You cannot certainly replace decrees and invocations with cold showers. So there are many of these ideas that are found that have some basis in reality, but many people tend to take them too literally. They want them to be universally valid and apply to every situation. So there can be many cases where, let's say you are at work and you are having a stressful work day, perhaps dealing with people who are upset, and you come home and you feel burdened by energy. So you take a shower and you feel better afterwards. But in most cases, the shower will not have cleared away all of the energies you might have taken on during the day. And there are different levels of energies. So we can say that there are some energies that are mostly at the physical level, some at the emotional, mental identity level. And there are also some energies that are directed at you that you take in because you have a subconscious self. And those energies you cannot wash away by water. You need to, of course, eventually dissolve the self, but you need to give the decrees or invocations to transform those energies. So it would be certainly not the optimal approach to think that you can just immerse yourself in water and it will clear these kind of energies. As I said, you can temporarily feel better, but it doesn't mean you have completely cleared the energies. And there will be some energies that you're not clearing away by the water, but you also don't notice them consciously until they have accumulated to a certain level where they now begin to affect you more. So in other words, most people don't have the discernment to read energy they take on. And therefore, they don't notice it. They don't realize it. They don't, so to speak, feel bad the same day they take it on. It takes longer and the energies have to accumulate more before they start feeling it. And sometimes they actually experience effects of the energy, but they don't realize what it is. So that's why our decrees and invocations are, of course, designed to help you do a more long-term, deeper cleansing of energies. And we gave some very constructive, useful teachings at the conference on deep healing that we gave in Estonia. So you can certainly use those teachings to clear your four lower bodies. Next question. Beloved Ascended Masters, you teach that Earth operates under the law of free will and that souls chose to incarnate here for accelerated growth, even if they did not fully grasp the depth of duality and manipulation present. My question concerns the integrity of free will under asymmetry of awareness. Some beings understand psychological and energetic manipulation while others do not. If consent is shaped by fear, misinformation, or systemic pressure, is that consent metaphysically complete? If a soul consents to incarnation without fully realizing the extent of systemic manipulation, of engineered coercion that may later arise, is that original consent metaphysically complete? Or does incomplete awareness qualify the nature of that choice? And if those who understand the mechanics of manipulation structure choices to appear voluntary, can karmic law be bypassed through such technical loopholes? Or does a higher corrective mechanism ensure that free will cannot ultimately be exploited? How is divine justice preserved in a universe where knowledge and power are unevenly distributed? Why would primary source permit a system in which souls can be drawn into extreme suffering through traps they did not fully comprehend at the point of incarnation? If the person is here who has submitted that question, is the person here who submitted that? That was you. Can you just elaborate on what you mean with metaphysically complete? I'm not sure what.
Basically, I'm asking that the fact that there is a loophole in the system that like dark force or entities can use that to manipulate people to not have their karma. They make sure that the karma is taken by the people which they trap. So the question is that how is it possible that there is a mechanism whereby when you incarnate, you don't know about that. You don't know what is waiting for you. You are not fully aware. So is it really free will to be trapped already from the start, that you go down to Earth and you don't know that there is such a trap that you can be trapped by the dark?
But are you talking about when you incarnate now or the first time you incarnate?
All the time. Well, first time at least. First time, yes, but then later. And then getting worse and worse. And then you are trapped like in a...
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood the wording there. Okay, so, well, actually, Mother Mary will comment. You have to be careful that you don't become too linear when you consider these very subtle questions. What people throughout the ages have had a tendency to do is they look at conditions as they are right now, and then they want to project from there how it was in the future. So you might say, for example, that today many people have no awareness of, for example, dark forces who are manipulating them into making karma. Many people aren't even aware of karma, so how can they make a free choice? But you see, this isn't where it started. So the Earth, as we have explained, started as a natural planet. There were no fallen beings, there was no manipulation of free will, there was no deception. But what happened was that there were groups of life streams that descended to Earth. They worked with their spiritual teachers, as they do on all natural planets. At the time, the Earth was a natural planet, of course. And many of those people ascended. Then there was another group that descended. Most of those also ascended. And then there came a point where the inhabitants that were left on Earth decided to go into duality and the illusion of separation. And this was not manipulated. Nobody manipulated them into doing this. It was something they decided to do to experiment with the duality consciousness. Now, the spiritual teachers that were there at Earth at the time attempted to help them experiment with duality without getting stuck in it. And many did this, but others got trapped in duality and therefore created what we have explained previously, that downward spiral that could have led to the planet's destruction. And so what you need to understand is that once the majority of the beings on a planet have gone into duality, we cannot help them directly. They cannot contact us. They lose their sense of connection. We can give out our teachings, but we cannot work with them directly. And that means they now go into what we call the school of hard knocks, where they need to now make choices and experience the physical consequences. And you have to be careful that you don't reason that when people go into duality, they no longer have free will. You could reason that before people go into duality, they have free will, and then when they go into duality, they are blinded, so therefore they don't have a free will because they don't have a clear vision. But you see, even before they went into duality, they didn't have a completely free will in a sense that they had complete awareness of what they were choosing and what the consequences would be. Because you can only make choices based on your level of consciousness and what you see at that level. So if you want to look at free will as if it should be completely free, then that means you would have to have complete awareness of the situation where you're making the choices. And essentially, to put it a little bit on edge, only the Creator has complete awareness of what happens in the world of form and the allness and so forth. So therefore, you could say that even the ascended masters at the highest level do not have the awareness of the Creator, and therefore their will is not as free as the Creator. And of course, in an unascended sphere, people have a lesser awareness of the whole, and therefore their will is not as free. But you see, free will does not mean completely free will. Because what's the purpose of free will? It has never been the purpose of giving free will or the law of free will that will should be completely free in the sense that you can choose anything you want. The purpose of existence is that you start with a point-like sense of self, and based on what you see, you make choices. You can see certain options, and you choose one of those options. Then you experience the outcome, and then based on that, you raise your awareness. When you raise your awareness, you see more choices, more options. Therefore, your will is a little more free because you have more options to choose from. You also, as you raise your awareness, become more aware of the consequences of your choices. But you see, this is how you grow. You grow from a limited sense of self to the greater consciousness by making choices with your present level of awareness. and experiencing the consequences. So even before a being goes into duality, its will is only as free as its level of awareness. While when beings go into duality and separation, their will is, of course, less free because now they only see the dualistic polarities. They only see the dualistic polarities. They have lost the connection. When you have a connection to something outside your own mind, you also have the possibility to reason, what if there are some options I cannot see with my current level of consciousness? Then you can appeal to whatever you are connected to, however you see it, and ask for clarification. When you go into separation, you cannot do that. That means you can only choose what you can see, and you can only learn by experiencing the consequences. And before anyone goes into duality, they have some awareness of what duality is. It has been explained to them by their spiritual teachers that duality can become a trap because it can become a self-validating system, state of mind. So in a sense, people know what they are going into, even if they don't fully realize what it is. They have at least some awareness, and they choose to do it. They choose to react in such a way. They essentially choose to say, I want to experience what it is like to be immersed in duality. But in order to have that experience of being immersed, you have to forget that there's an alternative to duality. Otherwise, you're not fully immersed in duality. But what is the characteristic of duality? There are always two opposite polarities. There are always two sides of the coin. But you can have people, for example, beings, who decide that they want to experience duality because they want to experience the contrast. So, let's say someone desires to experience what it is like to be a warrior. And the person envisions that he is this powerful, skilled warrior who always wins in a duel with another warrior. So his primary motivation for wanting to have this experience is that he wants to experience what it is to be the victorious warrior. That's what he has in his conscious mind. That's why he decides to go into duality, where he can experience this. But what he has been told, but what he hasn't really fathomed, is that when you go into duality, you can't just experience being the victorious warrior, because you need to have, and you are essentially saying you want to have, the full experience of duality, which means you have to experience both being the victorious warrior and the defeated warrior. You cannot have one without the other, because then the experience of duality isn't complete. But many people, when they go into duality and are defeated and have the unpleasant experience, they decide, I don't want to have that. So now they go into this state of mind where they want to deny that in duality you have to have both. They go into denying that they must be defeated in order to be victorious. You cannot be victorious without defeat, because there must be the contrast. But they deny this and they try to avoid it. If they could tune into the Ascended Masters, we could tell them that this is impossible. But they can't, so therefore now they become susceptible to the false teachers, the fallen beings, who tell them, oh yes, it is possible to only have the good and not have the bad. And if you just follow us, our religion, our ideology, this and that, you can have the ideal society. So, you can of course step back and say, well, how did the fallen beings come to Earth? We have explained this extensively. in order to stop that downward spiral that the beings had created. And in a sense, you could say that the uniform society that was there before the fallen beings came was also based on a denial, where they were trying to create a society where there was nothing negative, no negative consequences, no conflicts, but it was forced. So the point is that even when people go into duality, whatever they encounter there is still within the law of free will. Because the only way they can get out of duality in some cases is to see duality outplayed to such an extreme that they can't stand it anymore. And that is simply what the fallen beings do. They serve as a substitute teacher, because they will do things in duality that the ascended masters, of course, would not do. And thereby, the contrast between the good and the bad in duality becomes bigger. Now I realize this takes some contemplation. It is not an easy thing. We have said before that most avatars, part of the reason why you came to Earth, we came to Earth, is to fully resolve the enigma of free will. But you see, there is always a choice that leads to a consequence. And the difference between being connected to the ascended masters and not being connected is that when you are connected, you can learn about the consequence before you make a choice, because we can show you. That's our role as teachers. When you go into separation, you can only learn about the consequences by making the choice. But this is still within the law of free will. Of course, your will is not free in duality, but it is still free in the sense that you always see more than one option, and you have the freedom to choose between those two options. Can the Ascended Masters comment regarding the ascendance of Mother Teresa? In one answer, Master Jesus said she will not need to return to incarnation, but she will need to undergo some healing to free herself from the consequences of the consciousness she has assumed. While there is an answer from Mother Mary from the 2017 conference in the Netherlands that her soul did not ascend but actually descended into incarnation once more, this incarnation that Mother Mary told us, is it in the material realm or another realm where healing is provided, as Jesus said? Mother Mary, in general, to avoid confusion, when we talk about incarnation, we always talk about the physical realm. So if you read the two answers carefully, you will see that the one from Jesus was given quite a long time ago, shortly after Mother Teresa's body passed away. And what he was saying was that she did not have to return to incarnation, which means she didn't have karma that could only be resolved by incarnating again, meaning karma with other people. Her selfless service to others had balanced that karma she had from past lives. So we have explained that when you have balanced a certain percentage of your karma that you have with other people, you can resolve the rest of your karma from the higher realms. Because this is primarily karma you have with yourself, and the karma you have with yourself is your unresolved psychology. And in many cases, you don't have to reincarnate to resolve it. So Jesus at the time approximated or anticipated that within a decade or so, Mother Teresa could resolve that karma. But this is, of course, subject to free will. So as it turned out, she was not willing to look deeply enough at her relationship with God and her involvement with the Catholic Church, and basically also her relationship to Christ, her conception of Christ. And therefore, she, along with her teachers, decided that there would be a better opportunity that she could resolve this psychology by incarnating again. So this was not something she had to do, but something she chose to do in order to resolve that psychology that she couldn't resolve from the higher realms. This, in a sense, applies to most people, at least most spiritual people. You see in between embodiments that there's some psychology you haven't resolved. You see you have ignored it for several lifetimes, and therefore you choose to come into your next lifetime where you put yourself in a situation where it becomes very difficult to ignore that psychology. And that is what Mother Teresa has done. She has put herself in a situation where it will be very, very difficult for her to ignore the need to resolve her view of the Catholic Church, her view of Jesus and Christ, and her view of God. What the specific are, I will not reveal. But she has chosen a very difficult situation for herself, which shows her dedication to growth. Beloved Ascended Masters, you have explained that many UFO sightings and related phenomena may arise through astral crossover or collective consciousness, and that fascination with them can create energetic distraction. Yet on one occasion, without seeking such experiences, I felt a spontaneous impulse to photograph the sky and capture two structures luminous objects. How should a spiritually grounded student interpret an unsolicited experience of this kind? How can one discern whether it reflects projection, astral manifestation, or a lawful perception of a broader reality while maintaining full self-responsibility and avoiding dependency or expectation? Mother Mary, well, you can only interpret such experiences through what we call Christ discernment, which is really an ability to read energy. And so, if you are in doubt about how to interpret the experience, you don't have the sufficient level of Christ discernment. And therefore, there is really nothing I can say that would resolve this for you. You need to look at yourself, look at your psychology, and try to see what it is that blocks your discernment. A place to start would be, why are you so fascinated by this phenomenon? Why is it so important to you? You could essentially say, why does it matter to me whether UFOs are real or not? Why is this important? And then gradually try to see what it is you think you would get out of it if UFOs were proven to be real. And what do you think you would lose if UFOs were proven not to be real? You see in the way you ask the question that this is an important question for you. But why is it important? Do you have what the Buddha called an attachment to a specific answer to the question? Do you want UFOs to be real, and why? This is the only way you will develop a higher Christ discernment. Because at your current level, if I say UFOs are not real, you will not believe me anyway. It must come from within, whether they are real or not. And so The question is, do you want to continue believing what you believe now, or do you want to achieve that higher discernment? Then I have given you the hints, and we have given many teachings on how to overcome separate selves so that you gradually rise to that discernment where you can read energy. Do you have an extra pen that you don't need? I'd just like to be able to cross them out so I don't get confused about, because they're on both sides. Sometimes I turn the page and I'm not sure have I done it or not. Okay. Sorry. Hello. Thank you for answering my question. If the life that I experience is really just an outpicturing of the contents of my consciousness, then I'm thinking that I co-created the animals in my life, that they are reflecting to some degree what is in my consciousness. Therefore, if they are of ill health, perhaps if I work through specific separate selves, their health to some degree will improve. For example, I have a horse with a chronic illness, Cushing's. Don't know if that's the name of the horse or the illness. Many horses develop it as they age. The vast majority do very well with dietary changes and a certain medicine. My horse is an exception. For all horses, with Cushing's, it gets worse between the summer solstice and the winter solstice. For my horse, it was almost impossible to control it. He was on so much medication, he had horrible side effects. It was a daily question if I needed to put him down. Is it possible that he may do better if I can identify with separate selves, which separate selves are associated with my horse's Cushing's being almost impossible to control and his subsequent suffering? Can it work like that? Mother Mary, you begin your question by asking, is what I experience just an outpicturing of the contents of my consciousness? And the answer is, of course, yes, but you have to be careful here. Your horse's illness is not a direct result of your subconscious selves or the horse's subconscious selves, because horses, of course, don't have subconscious selves. But your relationship to your animals is meant to show you something about the way you look at Earth and your role here on Earth. We have explained how many avatars came to Earth with a certain vision of wanting to do something good. And what happens is, of course, we receive the birth trauma, we realize we can't fulfill our vision and our hopes, and then we can go into seeking to compensate. We want to find something that we can improve, some aspect of life on Earth that we can save or heal. And there is a certain percentage of avatars who, because of disappointments in past lives, reason that people are too difficult to work with. They are impossible to work with. And they give up. I don't want to work with people. I don't want to try and save people. But you still want to save something, so you now turn your attention to animals. And I am not saying this is necessarily wrong. We are generally not using the words right and wrong. But what I am saying is, this is not why you came to Earth. You didn't come to Earth to save horses. You came to Earth to help people. So You can say that your horse's illness is an outpicturing of something unresolved, some subconscious self. But it isn't the illness that matters. It's that it seems incurable. It seems like you can't help the horse. And the message really is, when will you return to your original purpose of helping people? When will you see that working with animals is a diversion from your original purpose, and that you will only really be fulfilled when you focus on helping people rather than animals? Now, I know that many people will say, well, does that mean that nobody should be a veterinarian, that you should not try to help animals? But that's not what I'm saying. There are many people who are in a lower level of consciousness than you are, and it can be part of the divine plan to work with animals for a variety of reasons. But when you are an avatar, when you have reached a certain level of consciousness, where you are open to asking an ascended master a question, you are at a level of consciousness where you need to reconnect with your original vision for coming to Earth. And this doesn't mean that you necessarily have to fulfill that mission, but you have to look deeply into the psychology, go back to the primal self and the birth trauma, and come to the point where you see why your vision for coming to Earth was unrealistic, and you give it up. You resolve in your psychology that you do not want to do this impossible task anymore. Then you can do a possible task of actually helping people by being the living Christ in embodiment, as we have explained at this conference. So you see what I'm saying. You can be fixated on trying to solve a specific problem, but it is not solving the specific problem that is the important thing. It is the deeper lesson of stopping trying to do the impossible and returning to what is possible. The Ascended Masters say that we cannot interfere with another person's free will. If we do interfere, we'll generate karma. If we see someone needs help, can we ask the Ascended Masters to help them without generating karma? Mother Mary? Well, you have to be careful here that you do not think that trying to help other people automatically means you are interfering with their free will. Of course, if you are trying to force people, if you have a vision that you want to help them, but you are forcing them to be helped a certain way, then you can make karma. But there can be many times where you are seeking to help other people from a neutral state of awareness, where you're not pushing them into some change that you see, but that they don't see, and then you're not making karma. And you can essentially say that, in general, you will not make karma by offering people help and giving them the option to reject or accept it. In terms of whether you can avoid making karma by calling to the Ascended Masters to help people, yeah, of course, you will not make karma for asking us to help them, because we also will only help them within the context of free will. We are not going to manifest some physical manifestation and force them to go to a psychologist. We are going to seek to give them some impulses from within. Now, in many cases, it will not work because they cannot tune into us. and cannot receive those impulses. But in terms of you making karma, it is of course safe. You also do not make karma for making calls, decrees, and invocations for people. As long as you are not charging them with some kind of intent. So you could say, in general, do not seek to force people or form an image of how people should be helped. Instead, make calls to us that they will be cut free from lower energies, ties to dark forces, so they can make a better choice. And then you leave it up to their free will what they will choose. Skip this one. Is the joint continuous search for truth genuine, and is the alignment of my life with it consistent with Saint Germain's vision of the Golden Age? I have lived a considerable part of my life in this shared way of searching, which is based on people turning to the true, the undivided, asking questions of each other, freeing themselves from the grip of and influence of the ego, and thus growing, freeing themselves from self-attachment and illusions. In doing so, I have experienced breakthroughs that were quantum leaps for me. On the other hand, I am sobered, or rather enlightened, as far as the overall result is concerned. It is up to each individual to take their own steps or not, whether they choose. We have tried unnoticed to do better than others, which was probably a fallacy, a dead end. Many participants in the Toko course experienced an unexpected quantum leap, contact with their own higher self. This has a more or less pronounced influence on the rest of their lives. I ask for comment from Ascended Masters. Toko course. Can you quickly explain what it is?
Oh, this is a 1 week course, and the basic is to ask questions on certain issues daily. It's very daily life questions about anger or ownership and, or superiority or inferiority. And,
okay.
And it's not a course that we teach something. It's only about question. It's,
okay. So it's something you do together as a group?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a course where people are asking these questions that are mentioned here. Okay. Mother Mary? Well, in general, anything that raises your awareness of yourself and your own reactions can be beneficial. But the question is, how deep does it go just to ask questions? There comes a point where you have to realize that not all psychological issues can be resolved by asking questions, because you can only ask questions about something you are aware of already. And there can be things hiding in your subconscious mind that you cannot consciously formulate a question about. For example, the birth trauma, the primal self. Unless you have an awareness of this, it is very difficult to ask deep enough questions. So the approach can be useful for many people, but it cannot necessarily resolve all issues. There are various modalities out there that are valid, they are useful, they can give people breakthrough experiences. And I'm not saying you should not participate in such things if you feel attracted to it. I'm not recommending it universally either. But you still have to consider, can you go deeper? And if you're aware of Ascended Master teachings, then I suggest you start using our teachings to see how you can go deeper. In terms of a lifelong quest for truth, is it genuine? Is it in alignment? are consistent with Saint Germain's vision for the Golden Age? Well, it is valid enough to search for truth if you are willing to continually refine your vision of what truth is. Because you always start the spiritual path, you always start your life at a certain level of consciousness. And at that level of consciousness, you can formulate a certain question of what truth is. And so you can then embark on a quest to search for that truth. But you see, when you rise to higher levels of consciousness, you can see a higher view of truth. So if you insist on holding fast to your original view of truth, you will limit your growth. We have said before that it is not the goal of the Christ consciousness or the ascended masters to bring some absolute truth to us, because it can't be done with words on an unnatural planet. It can't really be done with words anyway. But that when you reach the levels of Christhood, you give up the quest for an external truth, and you seek for an inner experience that cannot be formulated in words, and that you know is not the ultimate experience for us, because you know there are higher levels of consciousness, there are higher levels of Christhood. So it is, of course, you could say, all spiritual seekers are on a quest for truth, but you see many spiritual seekers who slow down their growth because at a lower level of consciousness, they formulate a certain image of truth, and now they seek validation of that truth. But what you see at a lower level cannot be ultimately validated. What you see as truth at the 48th level will not be validated by the Christ mind, because then you would stay at the 48th level. Once this seventh sphere ascends, is an eighth sphere going to be created? Will beings like Jesus and Mary and people like us, once we have ascended, create it? Will it have to be more dense yet, or will it? Do we have the free will to make it less dense? Mother Mary? Well, I'm tempted to say, let's take one thing at a time. You are on Earth, which is a fair way away from ascending. So let's first get the seventh sphere ascended, and then we will worry about the rest. But of course, it is possible to answer these questions. Yes, there will be an eighth sphere, and it will be denser than the current one, because that's part of the design of the Creator. Now, it will be created partly by those of us who have ascended now and some of you that will ascend later. But we do not have the free will to make it less dense, but we have the free will to design structures in there according to our vision and experience, so that as we can see it, we make it easier for the beings who will embody there to ascend, even though the sphere is dense. This is sort of the progression, where you see, for example, that beings who ascended in the first sphere have no experience of how it is to ascend from a sphere as dense as the seventh. And therefore, they would actually not be that skilled at designing the eighth sphere. But we who have ascended from the most dense sphere so far, we have the skills to design the sevenths, the structures in the sevenths, in such a way that our experiences will make it easier for the new live streams to ascend to avoid being trapped in identification with matter or trapped in duality. So we certainly have a high degree of creative freedom, but we work, of course, within the overall design of the Creator. Now you have to be careful here, because when you say, can we make the sphere less dense, it implies that you think that the suffering you see on Earth is a product of the density of the current sphere. And while that is to some degree true, you have to realize that the fact that the spheres become more dense is actually an opportunity to transcend yourself from a more difficult starting point than beings in, for example, the first sphere. So that is part of why Jesus said, the last shall become the first, and the first shall become the last, because there is a greater opportunity to raise awareness in a denser sphere than there is in a higher sphere. Sure. Did you not get the last?
Yes. I got that last. This problem with Wi-Fi. I'm on a general Wi-Fi.
Okay. Okay. So we'll take a 15-minute break.
Bye.